So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé MK. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing Season 8, Episode 5 of 90 Day Fiancé. In this episode, Rebecca starts to move into a new apartment, Stephanie tells us the convoluted plan to get Ryan money, Julia is done after one day on the farm, Tariq takes Hazel to see the spiritual center where he wants to get married, Mike and Natalie go to a waterfall and fight about meat, and we learn some of the details about Yara and Jovi's past. As always, we'll end with our Students of the Week, class dunces, and life lessons. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star rating and subscribe. And if you also watch Love After Lockup, you should listen to our other podcast, Love After Lockup MK. Okay, thanks for listening, stay safe, and enjoy!
Hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are you?
Not doing, too bad. We got a new year. Definitely ready for that.
Yeah, definitely. So are you off of winter break already?
Yeah, winter break. I was back to work today and it was the same slog. Like this year was a little different. Usually there's like a little uptick. Like everybody comes back in the new year, like kind of refreshed with their New Year's resolutions. Today everybody came back and was just like, I didn't do anything over winter break. No.
Oh, I fear for winter break because we did a homeroom activity on Desmos. And so they all had to draw a picture. My homeroom had to draw a picture. Let me just tell you, anecdotally, there was a lot of traveling. And there was a lot of things that I was just like, I don't really understand your picture. But a lot of my students went to the snow, which in California means you have to travel there because we just don't have snow. But there was definitely some traveling.
Yeah. So, yikes.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of snow, I'll start off with Mike and Natalie. So Mike and Natalie are feeding the fish, and then Mike says, she's a natural. He's worried about leaving her alone because he has to go back to work. He is a manager at a construction supply store, and it makes it difficult for him to take time off. He's planning on sneaking out early so they can do a weekend trip to Snoqualmie Falls. Mike wants to light a firework for fun, and Natalie is worried that it will literally scare the fish to death. She tells us that she is confused why Mike thinks that's fun because she thinks it's just really strange. She thinks she's starting to learn more about his personality. Mike thinks that the benefit of living out in the woods is, being able to shoot off fireworks. He thinks that she's being paranoid and that she thinks that everything is going to take her out. The next day, the cat is sitting on Natalie's lap, and then Aria, the cat, bites her. Natalie says she hates the cat. She then tries to do some laundry and is confused about how complicated laundry is here. She then mistakes bleach for softener. Softener is the same as whitener, she says. Same. We never really see the results of that, so we can just hope she was talking herself through it.
I hope production told her not to do that. That would have been terrible.
Natalie then video calls her friend Svetlana. Natalie says that, she fell in love with Vacation Michael. She has an airing of grievances, which includes a detailed account about how fish can die from loud noises, Michael ignoring her concerns, the cat, how cold it was, and almost anything else. Natalie tells us that she trusts Michael only a little bit. Natalie says that she put a lot of herself into this relationship, so she thinks she should just give it more time. Natalie overall is unhappy and not having fun. She is sad because she thinks that there's still a chance that it won't work out and she wouldn't know what to do then. We find out that Mike is commuting to Seattle, which is 3 hours away, which is the whole reason why Natalie is alone for so many hours in a day. Natalie wants to move to Seattle, but Mike says it's just way too expensive. Natalie doesn't like the countryside, and we see her cleaning and taking out the trash and doing, wifey work. Natalie is really excited for their weekend away. Natalie says she wants to raise concerns with him, but she is afraid how he will react. They make their way to Snoqualmie Falls, and they go to a nice restaurant where they're served by someone who basically has the same voice as Mike. Mike orders a wine and a steak, which goes against Natalie's view of being a vegetarian, and drinking alcohol. Mike is a bit frustrated with the communication between them. Natalie passively-aggressively tells him that many animals died to make his meal. Natalie says if he changes his eating habits of 1 week meat on, 1 week meat off, that it'll show that, you know, he can compromise and that he respects her views. He agrees, and that makes her very happy. The next morning, they go to see the falls, and Natalie is finally having fun. She sits on Mike's shoulders as she takes pictures, and they're playfully humming and dancing up and down the stairs. Natalie is clearly in a better mood. That is, until Mike takes them to a brewery for lunch. He orders beer. Natalie once again is passive-aggressively making a comment about the fact that they're at a bar and comments on his meat and alcohol consumption. Natalie is surprised that he ordered meat because she thought their meat challenge started today. And Mike said it was supposed to start next week. Natalie wonders if he'll ever change. And if he doesn't, she said that she will not feel respected. Natalie is shocked that the burger she ordered isn't actually meat. She then decides to bring up their lack of a wedding date. She says that they need to pick a date if they want to make this work, but Mike just kind of shrugs it off and says he really can't right now because he's just not sure, and she just got there. Natalie wants to start making plans because she doesn't want to feel insecure in their relationship. Mike is kind of dismissive, but he does agree to making sure that her mom will be there when it happens. He orders a root beer float because he insists that she needs to try some new American foods, and Natalie is confused by what it is. She tries to sniff it and really kind of mix it around. And in the end, she isn't quite convinced that there isn't any alcohol in it, even though Mike insists several times. But Natalie's consulted the menu and she's really thrown off by the word beer. Mike doesn't like that she doesn't trust him. Natalie concludes that since it says beer, it must be beer. And once again, Mike dismissively says, well, more for me. All right. So Mike claimed, and Natalie wasn't wrong in this. He said that by the next day he was going to give up meat for the week. And he said he was going to do this the next, you know, he was going to start tomorrow, right? Just like the New Year's workout plan and the New Year's diet. It's like tomorrow.
Right. Tomorrow. Yeah. First weekday of a new year.
That's right. Right. Mm-hmm. So do you think that Mike is ever going to give up meat and follow this kind of meat on, meat off plan that Natalie has for him?
No, I don't think he is. And I think he was justifying it himself. Like, all right, we'll start the challenge tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But since I already had meat today, this clearly means this is meat week. So next week is vegetarian week, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially not like, I can totally see him like being like, but no, not at a restaurant. That doesn't count. That's not the same. Like, you want me to get vegetarian stuff? You want me to come and spend for vegetarian stuff at the restaurant?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Like, we'll do it at home.
Yeah. For the record, no, I also want to point out that Natalie is not vegetarian. She's very clearly pescatarian. So that might be just a translation thing.
But scallops aren't fish. So what is that?
I think pescatarian, I interpreted that as just a seafood.
Seafood.
Yeah, seafood.
Okay, at all seafood. What about people who don't eat fish but would eat like scallops? Or because at some point, and that's what gets me, at some point you are eating a living thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that she's not eating a living thing. I think some people kind of draw the line at what they think is like evolved, closer to people, right? So
right.
Mammals being closer to people than fish.
Right. But I don't know. It's weird that there's not a word for people who don't eat vertebrate. They will eat anything that's not a vertebrate,
mm-hmm.
right? Which would, because fish are vertebrates. I know, it's just weird. Pescatarian is probably the closest thing I can come up with.
Well, she even said to him that, you know, she would cook him fish. So when they were kind of talking about, you know, their week off of meat, she said, okay, well, she's like, I'll make you some fish. So it definitely seemed like the week off wasn't necessarily like vegetarian. It was more pescatarian.
Sure. Sure. But like, yeah, I don't see him. I don't see him giving up like meat. Like I don't see it. I don't see him giving up like the alcohol. And I really didn't like how judgy she was about him having a glass of wine and a beer. Like that was
at the same time
super judgy.
From what we know of her, are you surprised at all? She was incredibly judgy of Mike when they were, doing the before the 90 days, and you know they were you know, just religion, working out, you know, their eating habits, the drinking habits. It's like all these things Natalie has a problem with Mike. And Mike, in like kind of his defense, is very happy-go-lucky. He's very accepting of Natalie's differing views, and he's not trying to change her.
Yes, but she's trying to change him.
Oh, yeah, she's absolutely trying to change him, which is kind of like, well, you know, I don't think that that's, you know, I get that, you know, there is no perfect person out there for, you know, no one's going to be perfect and no one's going to be perfect exactly how they are. You're right. Always going to, there's always going to be something that you maybe not so happy with, but you're willing to live with. It's just, there seems to be too many things for Natalie.
Right, because she weirdly has a large number of like deal breakery things.
Yeah.
Which, and I thought was funny because she was so worried about like the fish.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to kill the fish, which apparently she eats. So I don't know why she cares if the fish get killed.
Yeah.
But like, you're going to kill the fish with the fireworks. But then like the cat shows up and she's like, get this goddamn cat bullshit.
She really hates that cat. Okay. And in her defense with the cat very clearly does not like her either. If you looked at the look on that cat's face, I don't know. Maybe cats just always look angry. But that cat looked super
angry. They do.
Angry.
But like, okay. So here's how I know that that apartment is legitimately cold.
Uh-huh.
Because that cat that clearly hates her was sitting on her lap.
Right.
That cat was like, yeah, listen, I hate you, lady, but your lap is warm, so I'm here. That's.
And guess what? I'm going to give you my grump face while I sit on your lap.
The fireworks were so weird to me because whatever. I feel like that's what like a 13-year-old boy would like living about the country.
Sure.
I could
yeah.
set off fireworks, but. He was setting off the fireworks and didn't seem particularly excited about them. Like, he had this, like, kind of bored look on his face as he was, like, firing the fireworks up in the air. It's like, you don't seem that into it, man.
I've never heard of fish dying from loud noises.
So, I mean, okay, so that there is, like, generally an illegal way to fish is by throwing dynamite in the water.
Oh, like, ow.
But
that's
weird. Like, but that's not the fish dying because of a loud. That's a concussion. It's like they die like
the impact,
the shock wave
sure.
of the yeah. It's a concussive force that kills them. It's not like they're not gonna die. Now, sometimes fish can hear like a loud noise and like, you know, because I think mice can do this too,
mm-hmm.
where if you scare them enough, they will give themselves a heart attack.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how fish work. It's probably not a heart attack.
Do fish even have hearts?
I'm pretty sure they do.
Okay. You'd think I would know this, but
you would think, yeah. Biology is not our thing. We are not anatomy or
no, we people. Are definitely not.
But like, okay, I was the bleach thing. Oh my god, I was like, you can't. I could. This is why I couldn't work for a reality show because she opened the cabinet and saw bleach, and I was like, no. And I was like, if I was the producer, I'd have been like immediately, be like,
slapped it out of her hand.
Yeah, just no. Like, I feel like she probably I'm almost certain she didn't, because if she opened it, once she opened it and
she smelled it. Yeah.
And she'd be like, oh, I know what this
it.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely felt like that was all kind of being played up. Like, laundry in America is so complicated and confusing. What do I do?
The stupid front load washing machines can be overly complicated. Like, I like my old timey, like it's like a friggin', you know, porcelain buggy, but I just want to turn my dial to the right thing and hit on. I don't want there to be five different
for a washing machine.
Yeah,
my washing machine's like that, and it's like pretty new. I've only had it for a couple years, and it's an LG, and it literally has a dial, and you can select which of the things, and if you want to override it, then there's an option too. But like, if you don't, like me, I'm pretty basic. I'm just like, okay, turn the dial, hit play. We're done.
Whatever. I just know I've only ever used them when I go to somebody else's house, mm-hmm. and it's always they are always like, all right, hold on, this is the dial we want to use, but when you hit that dial, you want to make sure you hit these two buttons over here too, because those want to make sure those lights are on. Then you got to hit play, and after you hit play, you have to stay and make sure it latches before it goes. I'm like, this is why I just want to.
Oh, I have a really easy one, and the best part about my washer machine is the song it plays when everything is done.
Yeah, I don't like the songs.
Oh, I love the song. Someone else was over when my song was going off on my dishwasher, I think, and they're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's my dishwasher. They're like, why does it do that?
Well,
I like
okay,
when they play
so
songs.
The The reason, and this is the part of the reason, to me, the songs seem weird because I all have just a bunch of old-ass appliances. And you don't need a song to tell you when it's over because you can clearly hear it when it's done. When my dishwasher is done, the thunderous loud noise that's coming out of the kitchen stops. And I don't need a song to tell me that it stopped.
Mine, actually, I do need a song because I have a very silent dishwasher.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. My dryer is the same way. Like, I know when the when that stops, it's done. I don't need a buzzer or a song to tell me it.
I think it's an Asian thing. Like, Asian appliances usually sing songs when they're done. Because I would say rice cooker also sings a song.
My rice cooker just clicks and the light turns off.
Is it an Asian rice cooker?
It's whatever the cheapest ass rice cooker on Amazon was.
Oh, well, I'm just telling you, all the Asian like companies, appliances that I have in the house sing songs to me and I like it.
All right. I think we got sufficiently off course with that one.
We definitely did.
Actually, then, now that we're speaking about appliances and kitchens and things, let's go to Rebecca and Ziad.
Okay.
So Rebecca has decided against moving in with her daughter and her fiance. So instead, she had to find a place in a hurry. The place she got looks like it's some sort of like converted warehouse or studio space or something that has been converted to apartments. Because, you know, there's like random poles all over the place in the apartment. As in like right next to the oven and right next to the front door. Anyway, right now, most of her stuff is in storage and she hasn't had a chance to go get it yet. So the apartment's not going to be ready when Ziad gets there tomorrow. She's excited for the apartment, but very worried that Ziad will not approve because it's not even this apartment. It's the building she lived in when she lived with her her ex that is such a big deal about Ziad. But anyway, he's going to get here tomorrow, and all she has is a mattress on the floor and dishes in the cabinet. She worries that he won't be able to assimilate, not just to America, but also to living life without his parents, friends, and family. So she does think that there is a small chance he won't get on the plane. Switching over to Tunisia, Ziad's whole family is coming with him to the airport to say goodbye. So her sister Wiem tells us her concern that this is a bad idea because Ziad seems more invested in the relationship than Rebecca. Hedi, his brother-in-law, talks about how it's going to be, you know, a lot of trouble, but who is he to tell Ziad who to love? Before he goes, he takes selfies with everyone, and there's much crying and much hugging before he leaves. So, I usually talk about this. Do you think that was Ziad's first plane he's been on?
It's hard to tell because, yeah, I'm going to say yes. I was going to say, it's hard to tell because he did kind of seem like maybe this wasn't the first time. Like, he seemed confident enough, right? He didn't seem like, what's going on? I don't know. But then given his lack of work history, he doesn't seem incredibly worldly in general. I'm going to say that this isn't something that he frequently does.
Yeah, so there was two clues that I was like, I don't think he's done this very much at all. One was the fact that everybody came to the airport with him.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to the airport? Let's bring the whole crew. Let's go, right? Yeah. And second, he was dressed really nice. And I feel like people who are more experienced at traveling, like, I'm going to be on this plane for whatever. I'm wearing sweatpants. I'm not messing with that, right?
Actually, I wonder if that's a country thing. Because there are still other countries where it's a thing to, like, kind of dress up. Like, to be on a flight. And what I find kind of interesting about that is if you read some of these airlines, they're mostly international companies, right? If you really read some of these airlines, like code of conduct and stuff like that, you're not supposed to be wearing sweats and things like that. I mean, I don't think anyone actually follows that. But if you read their like customer code of conduct, you're supposed to be dressed nicely. So, yeah, it could be one of those things where, you know, maybe he read that and was like, oh, I'm not supposed to be wearing sweats or comfortable, you know, not comfortable.
Right,
clothes.
Right.
Can't
yeah,
be,
but
like,
yeah, yes.
Nice.
Yeah,
but
there's a dress code. Yeah, there's a dress code. They're going to kick me off like they keep me at a restaurant. Sure.
Right. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I can't imagine that he has been on a plane before.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's that. And things that did happen before, though, is Rebecca is always like dreaming up these secrets, like manufacturing these secrets that she has to keep from him. It's super annoying.
It's stupid too, because it's like, do you even remember the secret she had from the first one? It was like, this one time I had a lesbian encounter. It's like, that's a secret? All right.
Yeah, it was like weird. He was like very, very concerned about it. And it was like, we weren't even sure how far along this lesbian encounter went.
Or how long ago it was. It's like, oh, just one time in my life I had a lesbian encounter, and I know your religion does not allow for that. And it's just like, okay, so this is some big dark secret. All right.
Right. But this one is like, I used to live in this building with somebody else.
Yeah, and another, she was just like, well, you know, if he finds out, he's going to be really, how would he ever find out?
Right. Why would he? It's one of those things that I'm like, not even sure you would share it, because she compared it to when she told him they were technically still married. And he was like, he was really upset about that. And I was like,
yeah, because
that's something you get upset about. Like, how divorced are you is definitely something to get upset about.
Right.
Like, I used to live in this. Again, I could even see if it was the same apartment, mm-hmm. kind of. Right. But like, just I lived in the same building with him. Like, no, that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah. I don't know. But at the same time, she isn't that wrong in remembering that Zied got kind of weirdly jealous over some bizarre things.
Sure.
Like, he definitely
that's right.
had a couple moments of like, you got freaked out over that. Like, I don't really understand what the issue is.
Are you looking at her tattoos? We're going to fight.
Yes. Right, and now. I'm just like, okay, calm yourself. He probably was just like, oh, I never see a lady with tattoos. Not like, I want to bang your girl because that's the look I'm giving.
Right. So, okay. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was Wiem said that like Zied is more invested in this than Rebecca is.
Maybe
Do you think
in
that's true?
I think maybe in coming to America. You know, okay. because he definitely wants to be in America, like a lot. And I almost want to say that it seems to me in some bizarre way. I don't know where I picked up on this. I think it was something in their first season, but I can't remember exactly that he wants to be an actor. Because wasn't he doing like bit extra parts and stuff? And I think that's like what he wants to do.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I don't remember that. But that's, I mean, and that's when I feel bad for people who come from other countries. They're like, I'll go to America. It's like, yeah, but you're going to Georgia.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Not,
right?
not really a big acting community you're going to run into there, man.
Oh, no, actually there is.
Oh, no, in Atlanta proper.
Yeah,
there's a late film, a lot
say.
Of stuff in Atlanta.
They
that's
do.
True.
I mean, you always see that the Georgia Peach thing at the end, right? So there's
right,
a lot of
cause
random.
Right, because they make it basically free.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
we'll give you money. Film here.
Yeah, so I don't know. All right, let's move on to Tariq and Hazel. So Tariq is excited to show Hazel how they eat in America. They're driving to Hair of the Dog, and Hazel remarks on how clean and uncrowded the streets are. But she's confused if they are serving dog or if they use the hair as seasoning at this particular restaurant. Tariq is in teacher mode, trying to teach Hazel the appropriate foods for breakfast, which include things like pancakes and waffles and French toast and eggs, but they do not include rice. Hazel isn't very hungry, but Tariq insists she has to at least sample everything. Tariq then lays out the plan for the day, which includes looking at some potential wedding venues. Hazel feels like she needs more time to adjust to things before jumping into wedding planning. Hazel says her parents want to get married, them to get married in a church, and Tariq says her parents aren't going to be there, so they can do what they want. Hazel asks if he's scared of church, and Tariq says he's scared of her church, as we get a recap of their church service, which included a lot of overly enthusiastic praise and people speaking in tongues. Tariq and Hazel try French toast, and he asks her what she thinks of it, and she says it's just way too sweet. She believes she will be fat and chubby here because food is too sweet, salty, and greasy. Tariq then tells her that Ari, his daughter, will be arriving tomorrow, and Hazel is worried that Ari won't like her. Tariq assures her that Ari will like her, but then also tells us privately in an interview that he is also worried. He warns Hazel that it won't be easy all of the time. And Hazel is worried that taking care of a special needs child may be too hard for her and it may ruin their relationship. Tariq takes Hazel to what he refers to is his church, which is not a church, of the ARE. Tariq says he's been going there for 17 years. Hazel thinks it's weird and she doesn't want to get married there. Tariq tries to sell it hard and Hazel insists that it's not a church, which is where she wants to get married. Tariq thinks that, you know, like it's a benefit that it's not a church. Hazel is a bit frustrated that he's not listening to her, but she says that she will think about it. All right, so I know that you are the person who does research. What the heck is the ARE? Tell me all about it.
It is the Association for Research and, what was the last one? Enlightenment.
Yes.
Right? It's basically, I mean, it looks like it's basically the spiritual center that this psychic guy came up with. It was
It's not a religion. Thing. It's just like a resource center, right?
Yeah, but they do have like they do like do they yes and no. It's not, I don't know that they have services or anything like right. that. But they had meditation rooms, and if you looked around, there was like a thing, a picture of the chakras over here next to a picture of Jesus. And so it's like, you know, it's a thing of all faiths, but like based on this guy's psychic like experiences, which I mean, he made it sound like he was like, he sat on this couch like Professor X and could like cut in his Magneto and started his Cerebro and like connected with people around the world through all different things.
I definitely got the impression it was kind of like Baby Yoda, like channeling the Force and then getting tired and falling asleep, because didn't he say something about that?
Well, yes, but he wasn't doing Baby Yoda stuff. He was doing, he was connecting mentally with people at a distance. It was like, oh, it's like Professor X. That's it. But he was really pumped about that giant crystal.
Yeah, he was.
I lost it at the giant crystal.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it did kind of lurk. Church-ish.
It looks like a rocket.
Well, no, the crystal in that room. And it had a nice view. He wasn't wrong about that.
It did have a nice view. And the thing was, he was like stained glass. I was like, those are curtains. That is not stained glass. Yeah. Those windows. But I totally was like, on her, and it's definitely one of those places that sounds like, and I'm not saying no judgments on what it is because I don't know enough about the ARE to know, but it definitely sounds like one of those places that they have to say it's not a cult.
right?
Like people, I'm sure that's like one of the first things when you start explaining it, you have to be like blah 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 blah, it's not a cult, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, my gosh.
So, like, I could see Hazel being like, this is weird. Now, granted, the church that we saw in the flashback wasn't exactly, you know, your typical Roman Catholic church. Just like a, you know, when people say they want a church ceremony. So, I don't know how they're going to be able to find what her parents are looking for here, you know?
Yeah. No, I have no idea. I do feel like she needs to be open to it just as Tariq is open to her church. But I also think it's okay at the end of the day to kind of not be on the same page of like, you know, where they want to get married. But, you know, they're going to have to come to some compromises. And okay, so I kind of question a little bit. Does Hazel really, really value and prioritize her religion? Because she seemed to for a hot second in the before the 90 days when they were on this.
Uh-huh.
But it seems to me that a lot of what she's kind of doing in life would go against their religious beliefs and practices.
Oh, you mean with all the like polyamory and
having a child out of wedlock. Uh-huh. Like there's a lot of things, right?
Yeah. So, yes, I guess. I don't know. It was one of those things. She seemed like she didn't say she wanted to get married in a church. She said her parents wanted her to get married in a church.
Sure.
Which, I don't know, he kind of dismissed it, but I thought, like, that's not unreasonable to be like, listen, I'm going to America, we're going to get married there, and to be like, could you at least throw us a bone and get married in a church?
Yeah. Like, he's like, well, they're not going to be there, so we can get married wherever we want.
We can do whatever we want and eat our sugar on top of sugar.
Oh, gosh.
More sugar on it.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. They don't really, if I think about, like, the times I've been in Asia and I haven't been to Philippines, it's like their desserts aren't even very sweet. Like, that kind of bothers me, like, because they put bean paste in everything, and I hate bean paste. It's like, well, that's not meant to be a dessert.
Yeah, no, it's like, well, I mean, it's like the freaking, there was a huge thing on Twitter about, like, the British people with their beans on toast for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, why don't Americans do this? Beans are delicious. Toast is delicious. And it's like, no. Like, but yes, American breakfast, everyone from all over the world, no matter where they come from, is like, why are you having dessert for breakfast? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it is ridiculously sweet. Like, and even the stuff that's not sweet, they sweeten up. Like, the chicken and waffles isn't particularly sweet as is, but then you're like, nah, we gotta drench it in syrup. And the syrup isn't even like pure maple syrup. It's just like corn syrup with liquid smoke in it. Like, that's all we're putting on things.
Yeah, but I get it. Like, you got to ease her into that. Like, that's way too sweet.
You do. And I was like, and especially when she was like, all she wanted was rice.
Yeah, like, get her grits. That's
get her grits.
Comparable.
The grits is a good choice. Yeah. Some sort of grain. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, give her some oatmeal or something like that. You don't have to go right on in for. What is it with French toast? Like, this is the second person in this season who is like, I would like to introduce you to American breakfast. French toast. Like, that is not the first thing I would think of for American breakfast, especially if I was going for like a Southern breakfast, like in the South.
Yeah.
Like, you get grits and you get biscuits and gravy. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. No one's had biscuits and gravy, although he did order chicken and waffles.
Yes. I'll give you chicken and waffles. Mm-hmm. But chicken and waffles is like weird because it's one of those, it's a weird combination. It's a unique combination to the South, but everybody has, waffles are international. Chicken is international. It's just that weird, like, putting them together for breakfast. That seems uniquely American South. But, yeah, I would have went for biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's because I almost always go for biscuits and gravy if I'm getting a greasy breakfast like that.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, let's talk Yara and Jovi.
Okay.
So the rug that caused such trouble last week has finally arrived from Amazon. Jovi hopes that, you know, as the rug comes, that he recognizes that they're both pretty selfish, and he's hoping that, you know, two selfish people should be able to make it work, because there's lots of selfish people all over the place. Yara says the rug looked like snow, and she's happy the place is starting to look a little more homey and a little less disgusting. Yara now has a new rule, which is a rule that, in my experience, leads to many fights online. You have to take off your shoes when you come to the house, so as not to ruin this beautiful white rug. He asks her what else she wants. They're kind of talking about, like, you have everything you want. What else do you want? And she has an exaggerated list, including being married to Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ooh.
Which, I mean, yeah, that's, I can't think of too many people who would turn that down. Anyway, which Jovi takes in stride as he, you know, is drinking his standard Bud Light. But at the end of the day, what she really wants is Yara does not want to live in New Orleans, and Jovi doesn't want to live anywhere else. But then they just kind of stop talking about that as if the issue was going to go away. It's tricky because, you know, and now we're getting to the tricky part where she's going to be alone in this city when he goes to work soon. But Jovi has the perfect way to make this up for her and to get the conversation into a better place, and that's to give her new iPhone, which she loves, and even though he sucks at taking pictures, or at least inadequate pictures. But soon it's the day before Jovi leaves, so he and Yara are going out to dinner to ask. And, you know, as they're walking, they're both like, how do I look? How do I look? Do you look good? It's weird. Anyway, they get there, and the waiter says it's happy hour, which is good for Jovi. Then they start the conversation about how they, you know, how do you feel about me going to work? He says that he's going to give his mom Yara's number so that she can text or call. But Yara is really concerned about, you know, how she's going to live a life where her only friend is her mother-in-law. She really wants to get and meet people with her own age. Jovi says it's important that Yara and his mom get along, especially because he wants to start a family here in Louisiana soon. Yara has some real issues with that starting a family in Louisiana soon, especially since his current schedule would mean that he would leave her with the kids for like 4 weeks on and 4 weeks off. To which his response is, what's the problem with that?
God.
Jovi says not everything is so easy, despite the fact that, you know, his life would barely change at all if he was having kids. This whole conversation, it's really close to home for Yara because, as we remember, Yara had recently lost a pregnancy and she needed some surgeries afterwards to deal with complications. And at one point, she went in for an operation in Albania, you know, in another country, because she had lost her passport and she needed the operation. And when she, right before she left, Jovi had left her in Albania to have a surgery by herself.
Ridiculous. I hate this guy so
openly
much.
Openly and tearfully wonders how she can trust him to support her with a future pregnancy or with children if he already did that. So in an interview, we learned that they both have very different ideas about how that whole situation went down. Mm-hmm. Jovi's defense is that when he left, she didn't need the surgery. So how was he supposed to know that this kind of thing would happen? And he didn't expect it to come up a year and a half later. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say he's pretty low key. If you were watching the vibe of the show and weren't really paying attention to what anybody was saying, you wouldn't think he was that bad. But like, he's always a huge dick.
Oh, he is the worst. He is so selfish. And so at the beginning of their segment, they're kind of talking about, he says, like, being selfish is okay. Everybody's a little selfish. And I feel
that
mentality in itself is why he sucks, you know, because he justifies his selfishness. He's like, well, everybody's selfish, so it's okay that I'm selfish. It's like, yeah, but you don't even try not to be selfish. It's like, work on yourself. Be better.
Yeah. I mean, I find that's true with almost every negative personality trait that people have. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. Everybody else is this. And it's like, are they, though?
Yeah. And you may be right. Everybody has moments of selfishness. People have moments of lying. People have moments where they're not good people. Uh-huh. But at the same time, it's like, you're still striving and it should be an exception, not the rule.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just... Oh, my God. I mean, I can't imagine. Forget if she had the operation, right? Could you, like, leave your significant other just in another country? Oh, you forgot your passport? Tough shit. Later.
Like, yeah. Oh, God, he's the worst.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that. She is, like, completely. To me, I know that, you know, Yara has her faults. But to me, it's like she's a godsend angel for dealing with this asshole. I don't understand why she's dealing with him.
I really have trouble with Yara's faults where I'm like, is it really a fault? Or is this like her defense mechanism and the way she deals with dealing with this colossal asshole?
Oh, like, yeah. No, I think Yara's, to be honest, I think she's great. She's funny. She's cute. Like, she's, you know, she tries. I mean, she's trying.
Yeah, she is. I do really like Yara. And I kind of feel like part of the reason, the only thing, you know, the whole, I don't want to live here. And I think that's because I think he really pumped up New Orleans as a glamorous city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's New Orleans. Because he thinks it is. People come here from all over the country. Mardi Gras, the parties. It's like, everybody wants to live in New Orleans. It's great. Like, it was a thing. And it has its thing and it has its vibe, but it is it's a hit or miss thing. It's not for everybody.
Oh, right. I thought it was super cute how she was just like calling it a village. And then I thought it was even more cute that she was like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone who lives there. I don't like it. You know, but that to me like is what makes her endearing. It's like you cannot like something, but she's like really cute about stuff.
Yeah, she is. She is. She is. Much more cuter than, well, are you going to leave me alone with the kids?
Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, what's the problem with that? What's the problem with that?
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, actually, it's kind of funny. I knew someone who actually did like a 90-day fiancé situation with a guy from, where was he from? Belgium. And he worked on a boat, and that's actually how they met. She was actually vacationing in the place where his boat was stationed. So he did a 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off, just like, you know, Jovi. And they had a kid. And it was really interesting because, you know, he didn't really have to take care of the kid by himself until he had come back, I think, right after they had gotten married. Mm-hmm. And it was him by himself with this kid, and he, like, freaked out. He's like, it's way too much work. It's like, what do you think your wife is doing the 4 weeks you were away?
4 weeks.
At least your wife is here. You just have to take care of the kid during the day because she was working.
Yeah. Like, forget about all that and then coming home. It's just – and he does another classic asshole move was, that's how I grew up. I'm great.
It's like, are you? You're not great. There
you're
should be
not
some...
okay. You're actually not – I turned out fine. It's like, actually, you didn't turn out fine. That's
no.
kind of the problem here.
Yeah, we need to avoid getting more abuse. Okay, yeah. So what I thought was kind of funny about their argument, whether or not Shu's in or out, was Yara brought up a very excellent point. She's like, you know, you come in here with the shoes and there's pee in the street and blah, blah, blah. And then he claims no one pees on the street in New Orleans. It's like, false. Of all the streets in all the world, if you had to guess which one had the most urine.
Yes, it would be Bourbon Street. Because she took her there, and
yes,
when she was there, she
literally
said, it smells like pee. Like, this street smells like pee.
Although, you know, a kind of a random funny thing is my friend, whose husband was the Belgian guy, she said that of all the family friends that she met of her husband's, she said that she realized that, I don't know if it's a Belgian thing or a Europe thing, but she said that they were perfectly comfortable with, like, finding a quiet spot and peeing on the street.
Weird.
And she kept on, she would have to tell them when they were here, you can't do that in America. You're going to get arrested.
Yeah, you're going to get trouble with the law if you do that. Yeah.
Right.
And it's just one of those things that comes up, and it's just the shoe thing comes up every once in a while. It's just, Americans just don't think about it.
Right.
We don't. It's like, it just we don't think it doesn't even occur to us to take off our shoes.
Sure.
Like, and so it's just I just have people like, it's so blah, blah. It's just like, it's not something that's on our radar.
Yeah.
So I get where he's coming from. And he was like, and he wasn't like, I could totally see some guys being assholes about it, but like, it's mm-hmm. my house. I'll leave on my shoes if I want to. He was like, all right. Well, I guess
right.
I'll try.
Well, I feel like he has to know that she's right. Right. So he's like, I'm going to say that no one pees on the street, but he has to know. He is probably like public.
He is definitely
offender
peed
number
on that street.
One.
Totally.
He's like,
totally.
Oh, yeah, I have peed on the street a bunch, haven't I? Oh, my goodness. OK, so I want to talk about their fight for a second. So just like, I think how they fight or how this fight went down, I think is really not productive. So it seemed to me that he was really defending what he thought was factual, and he got really caught up in like what actually happened. And it's like, I don't care what you think actually happened, right? And I don't care that what you think happened is different from what Yara thinks happened, right? Because they were fighting over like, did he know? At what point did he know? When did he leave? You know, it's like, it's the mm-hmm. fact that you left. And it's like, he's not focused on what she's really mad at. It wasn't that, you know, she was mad at the fact that he had no choice and that, you know, like all these other things that he keeps on like throwing in there. It's like, that's not what you're fighting over. And I don't think he gets that.
No, but it's just, he didn't get why they were fighting over the rug either.
Oh,
gosh. He was like, but I don't understand. I don't like that rug. And it was like, oh, my God. It was all the things surrounding that.
Yeah.
Right? And it was like, and from where I'm sitting, too, it's like, I almost kind of wish she would concede the point. Great. You didn't know I was going to emergency need that surgery.
Right.
You knew I needed that surgery. You knew I couldn't get back to my home country.
Right. You couldn't come
back. And you still left.
Yeah. Or you couldn't have left in the first place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I agree. It's like, I feel like Yara is struggling to communicate exactly what's wrong, and Jovi's getting hung up on these kind of pointless details.
Right. Yeah. That's totally true.
Yeah.
I mean, he just – it's not even dismissive because then he's frustrating because he's the kind of person that's like, all right, fine. I'm done fighting. Whatever. Sure.
Right. And fine. His way of saying that is to – like apologize, and like he has apologized to her a few times now, but they seem so empty. They don't seem sincere at all. He's just like, I'm sorry I did that, but you know, and then comes out with some reason why, and then it's just like, but it's not a sincere apology. He doesn't even say what he's sorry for.
Yep. I have that with my daughter right now. Mm-hmm. I'm dealing with, she apologizes for everything. And mm-hmm. I'm like, are you really sorry about that? Like, you know, I'll yell about, oh, you left your dishes on the table or something, but I don't even yell about it. I just say her name. And before she even sees what's wrong, she's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything when you just said that. You don't even know what was wrong. And you're already saying, I'm sorry. Right. And it's kind of a similar thing. And it seems empty. It's like, it stops being like, it becomes like more a part of the problem. Like, you're not even like saying anything meaningful. You just want it to you just want this to stop.
Right. Well, I mean, okay, maybe not even part of the problem, but it's not part of a solution, right? So how mm-hmm. can you move forward if a person doesn't really know what's wrong? Because if you don't really know what's wrong, how can you be aware for change in the future? You know, it's like, you can't be if you don't know. Like your daughter, it's like, well, you know, she can say she's sorry, but she doesn't know what she's sorry for. How is she going to know to put away the dishes in the future?
Right.
Right. So, yeah. All right. Moving on to, what do we have here? Oh, Stephanie and Ryan, which actually wasn't very long at all.
No.
I felt like it was just basically a big advertisement for Stephanie and her med spa situation, but Stephanie is pimping out her products and her med spa experience. Stephanie's cousins Ryan and Shannon come in for treatments and to gossip. Shannon shares that she is pregnant with a boy, and she asks Stephanie if there's any life-changing news on her end. Stephanie tells them as soon as the borders open, she'll be taking a trip to Belize for her formal proposal. She is going to give Ryan her mother's ring for him to propose to her with. Ryan and Shannon just smile politely, like nod and smile. Ryan tells us that she is concerned that Stephanie is being used financially. They raise concerns with Stephanie and her assistant friend, Pam. Their primary concern is that, you know, Ryan's younger and from another country. Stephanie doesn't assure them as she tells them that she's basically been supporting his entire family and gives them about $1,300 a month in essentials. She wants him to have self-esteem over it, so she hasn't outright given him the money. Instead, she has a friend who has hired Ryan to work at his resort, and she has an agreement with this friend where Stephanie actually is the one paying Ryan's wages. So Ryan doesn't even know that she's the one giving him money. Stephanie justifies this relationship, saying she has never wanted to marry anyone in her life except for Ryan. The cousins are skeptical, but in the end, they just wish her luck and ask her to send pictures. All right. So Stephanie kind of has this thing where it's like, it must be meant to be because I've never had this feeling before. So why do you think that Stephanie has never felt like she wanted to marry anyone before, but Ryan is somehow the one?
I don't know. I don't know if she's confused between what you're supposed to feel like when you want to marry somebody and what you feel like when you feel like a mom, because mm-hmm. she seems to be a little of both here, right? She has this weird like maternal thing, but I can't figure out because we haven't seen Ryan, right? And we haven't seen them with Ryan.
Right.
So I don't know what it is that is like, you know, like I certainly see by what we've seen with Ryan, I certainly see why she wants to hang out with him. I certainly see why she wants to like, you know, hook up with him all the time. That mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I don't know why this is the one that made me forsake my banishment of marriage and make me want to get married now, when he just seems like, I don't know, everything we've seen makes him seem like a boy toy that's, you know, has a sugar mama, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, to me, I don't know. And maybe this is me being somewhat cynical. Maybe this, and then also take it with a grain of salt because I am someone who is not married and never been married, you know, but I kind of like the way I kind of see relationships is I kind of feel like there's at some point you're choosing and really choosing to be with someone. And the reason why I say a choice is because feelings to me only last so long. Like this feeling of like love, like I just irrationally love this person so much and I don't know. And I think people like, I mean, I guess you could say that's being in love with someone, right? Kind of this mm-hmm. irrational love. And then at some point that is going to fade, or, you know, it's going to ebb and flow, right? You're going to have moments where you irrationally love someone more than other times. And at that point it needs to be a choice. And so I guess my real curiosity is here is, what about Ryan has made her choose this guy? Like, this right. is the guy I want to hitch my wagon to for the rest of my life.
Right, but it almost seems like the way she describes it, she hasn't chosen. It's been chosen for her. Like, all of a sudden, this guy came in, and this is it. Like, oh, I was swept off my feet, and that's it. Like, the universe changed my mind about everything.
Oh, yeah. She does believe in psychics.
Yeah.
Maybe her psychic told her. Although I doubt that psychic friend told her.
Definitely, she's definitely someone who believes in like the one and soulmates. Yeah. Definitely believes in soulmates, right?
I don't know, because I feel like someone who believes in soulmates, one, probably would have tried to do something about it earlier on in life, right? Because I also feel like people believe in soulmates feel that,
for their soulmate.
That they have to do something to find their soulmate. Their soulmate isn't necessarily just going to sit there. And I feel like it's easier to be single for the rest of your life, or kind of have this mentality that I'm going to be bachelorette for life, if you're kind of like, wow, well, there's not necessarily someone out there for me, right? If you kind of have that mentality, you'd be like, oh, I'm okay being by myself, because why am I going to deal with a bunch of idiots?
At the end of the day, she just seems infatuated with the guy. Plus, she also has like this sunk cost fallacy going with him, right?
Oh my gosh,
she feels like, because I already been giving him money, like, I gotta keep doing it. I'm all in now, like, you know, which is totally wrong. All right, we need to talk about this financial situation, because it irrationally angered me so much. I was screaming at the TV. If you want to help. Okay, so at the end of the day, reiterate what she's doing. She's giving money to her rich friend.
Yes.
Because they own a resort, her loaded friend, you know.
Which I don't understand. He's legitimately employed. Why isn't the friend paying?
Right. So at the end of the day, what you're doing to support your boyfriend is giving your rich friend free labor. You're giving your rich friend something for nothing. Because you want to support your boyfriend. Just give your goddamn money to the boyfriend. Forget the self-esteem bullshit. Don't transfer your money to the richest person on the island and call that charity.
I actually disagree with you there. I think it is smart of her, if she's going to give him money, to do it through a means of... maybe it's because, like, I don't know, single woman, right? But I do think that there are certain men, and I'm not saying all men, there's men that are a lot more open-minded about this, but there are men out there that aren't as progressive, that do feel like their worth is tied up in, you know, being able to provide for their family, right? And right now, his family isn't really necessarily Stephanie. It's like his actual, like, biological family, right? And so if he's getting money from Stephanie directly to support his family, it's like, well, is that really him supporting his family? You know, but by him working through it, I get that she thinks that it will help with his self-esteem. Now, I feel like the whole arrangement is super weird. I'm not saying anything against that. Super weird. Why can't he just have a job? Why does she have to be involved in any of this?
Why does she have to pay the wages? If she's going to pay the wages, why doesn't she pay him to start up a friggin' food truck or something like that he can do as a job? Like, give her the seed money for that. Pay the money so he can have his business or something like that that he can do. Because to me, I mean, the only part, and this is the stupid progressive, you know, East Coast elite liberal whatever of me being like, wait a second, the only person getting something free out of a situation is the rich person who needs it the least.
Like I said, I don't understand the situation at all. If he legitimately has a job with the hotel, I don't understand, like, why she's paying his wages, unless there's a situation where maybe the job that he is doing for the hotel isn't worth as much. And so he's getting overpaid.
My interpretation was, her friend said, I don't need any more. I don't need to hire anybody else. I don't need anybody else. And she says, well, hire him, and here, I'll give you the money for it. Right.
It's like, how good of a friend is this then?
Yeah. Like, how good of a friend is that? That they're like, whatever, I'll take your money, crazy lady.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm not saying it's not a bizarre situation. It's a very bizarre situation.
Yes. I'm so mad about that.
I was actually maybe more angered with the ring situation. Okay. It's like, you know, just the whole proposal and the ring situation. It's like, I don't understand why he has to propose with the ring that you're providing for him.
Yeah, that's a weird situation too.
Yeah. And it's like, but you know it's going to happen because you're the one having to provide the ring. So why can't we just all skip this charade? Just wear the stupid ring. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, especially if you like it. Wear the stupid ring. Why does he have to be the one to give it to you?
Yeah. Why are you going to give it to him so he can give it back in a couple of days?
Right. Like,
yeah. I don't see good things going down. I definitely see her giving him the ring and then being like, where the hell's the ring? Why didn't I get my ring back yet? Where's my ring?
When is he going to propose? Oh, it's not happening yet? Oh, goodness. Yeah. All right.
All right. Yes. Brandon and Julia.
Yes.
All right. So Brandon is up bright and early at 4:30 a.m. to go to work.
Sucks.
Leaving Julia with just the family friend, Aspen, who's going to help her on her first day at the farm. Julia is still upset about the bedroom situation, but Brandon tells us that she did manage to sneak into Brandon's room for some freaky time. 7 hours later, which, do the math, is 11:30, Julia wakes up alone on the farm and upset that when she looks out the window, well, there is animals. The only people on the farm with her is animals. So she goes out to try to do the farm work, like, you know, getting the eggs out of the chicken coop. After a few tries, she manages to get one of the eggs out, but then is afraid the other chicken is going to bite her because they're in the egg-laying section of the coop. Anyway, Aspen comes out and, you know, helps her get the eggs and then tells her she's slacking a little bit. The animals are supposed to be fed at the crack of dawn, 7 a.m. This isn't a great situation for Julia, who, you know, she's used to go-go dancing and going to sleep around 7 a.m., waking up, you know, just in time for lunch or so. Anyway, she feeds the goats and doesn't like the smell or the dirt. And then she has to feed the pigs that were such a pain in the butt last time.
Those pigs are so ugly.
She's still very scared of. Freaks out, screams, runs around, lots of wailing and gnashing of teeth and whatnot. Anyway, after a bit of running and screaming, she's done with the pigs. She's a good sport for Aspen, but in the interviews, she makes it pretty clear that she is done with this farm thing. But anyway, the next time we see him, it's already dark out again, and Julia is waiting for Brandon to finally come home so that she can talk to somebody, right? She feels kind of blown off because he comes home and doesn't, like, come into her room and give her a hug or a kiss or say hi. He just goes into his bedroom and lays down on the bed. So then Julia comes into his room, and when she comes in, by the way, she passes, like, a shelf that is just, like, full of protein powder from top to bottom.
Anyway, I thought those were cans of paint. I was very confused.
I thought it was protein powder. I was like, what? This dude's not even that big. Anyway, she says that today is her last day, but she's taking care of the pigs and she's done with that. Right? That literally that this kind of life is the life of her nightmares and she wants to go home. I think she said bad dreams, but I was like, she meant the thing of nightmares.
Yes.
Brandon wishes that she would see this as an opportunity and give life on the farm and, you know, give it more of a try. But they don't really have time to talk about it, because they're supposed to go out to dinner with his parents and granddad. So altogether, Brandon was home for less than an hour before they leave again. Then they get to Wasabi Sabi, the restaurant where dinner is. And Julia is nervous about the dinner because she doesn't really want to tell Ron and Betty about how much she hated doing everything on the farm. They hear Ron before they see them, and they meet Pop-Pop Joe, who's worried that, you know, that Julia might be promising Brandon things like sex that's going to lead him into trouble.
Oh,
at dinner, Betty points out some bite marks on Julia's neck, and it's just an embarrassing time all around. Pop-Pop Joe defends Brandon and says, you know, if he had a young girl like that, he would definitely do the same thing.
Oh, God.
Then they ask.
Gross,
they start
Pop-Pop.
They start talking about a wedding date. Well, Pop-Pop is definitely old enough. I think he said he was 87. We'll talk about it. They ask about the wedding date, which they have set at May 9th, because the 9th was the first day that Brandon messaged Julia. Of course, Betty knows immediately, without even hesitation, that that's Mother's Day weekend. And so she's pissed. Betty tries to get them to rethink about it, and so does Ron, and move the date so, you know, it wouldn't interfere with Mother's Day every year.
God.
You want to have that day separate, right? Anyway, Brandon to his credit this time, does take Julia's side and says that if she wants to get married on the 9th, they're going to get married on the 9th. All right. So and a lot of stuff going on in this one. Let's start talking about Pop Pop Joe. How do we like Pop Pop Joe?
He's all right. Like, there's nothing, anything crazy about Pop Pop Joe. But, I mean, when he says that he wants a young thing, I'm going to hope that Pop Pop Joe is talking about when he was young as well.
Pop Pop Joe, that's what I was trying to get at. He's 87, and he's definitely crossed that line where he's like, you know what? I'm 87. Nobody can tell me to shut up. I'm going to say whatever. I don't care.
His voice is very high-pitched.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. But I don't know. Okay, so lots of things. It was weird. I don't get – it seems very unfair, actually, that Julia comes to this farm day one. Mm-hmm. Everybody else goes to work to their day jobs, not on the farm. And they say, well, you got to take care of the farm. Like, what did they do before she was there?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't they just keep doing that for a little while?
I think it's just Aspen, but now they're like, you know, Aspen's getting some reprieve. I feel really bad for Julia. I actually like super love Julia and Yara. Like, I feel bad for them that they're with, for Yara, she's with a shitty partner, and Julia, she's just in a shitty situation.
Yes.
Like, what? I get it. Julia hates this. She doesn't want to live a life like this.
Right, and it's like it's almost like goes the other way, right? If you imagine it the other way, there is no way ever that Ron and Betty would give like living in a city and riding the subway to work every day and doing that and walking to the bodega to get the food. There was no way they would ever give that a try, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. I think it's kind of hard to say with Betty and Ron, but it's not really their decision anyway. They're not forcing her to do this. If anything,
it kind of seems like opposite, right? Right.
It seems like they're trying to get rid of her in a lot of ways. But I kind of feel like for her, I hope this isn't the first time she heard about farm living. It just seems to me, why would you want to date Brandon? Like, even now, what is so special about Brandon that she can't get somewhere else, somewhere better?
Yeah, I mean, he is
someone better.
Someone better. I mean, yeah, I feel like there are other – because he seems – and it's funny is the thing. He gives off the impression of being kind of wholesome, right? He has that aesthetic about it. I don't know that he necessarily is. I think there's a lot of shitty things that he does and a lot of, like, just getting away – with stuff, and I'm not going to talk about it, which I think is a big part of the issue. I do not think she knew at all what she was getting into because Brandon did not share that with her, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. It was really shitty of him to leave on her first full day at the farm, leave before she wakes up, come home, and doesn't even say hi.
Right. Like, no,
that's
absolutely.
That's shitty.
No, yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I kind of feel like I can see how she thought he was super adorable, super cute, right? And I feel like it's certainly carried them so far, right? But the more he does stuff like this, the more that, you know, he's kind of forcing her to be in this situation where she hates her life, you know, it's like he's going to start to look real ugly real fast. He's going to start looking like those pigs.
Yeah, that's true. Right. But you're right in that it's not him. And he did take her side on the wedding date thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that earned him some points of being like, they were really trying to convince him to move it. And he was like, now if she wants the 9th, she gets the 9th. He didn't like hem and haw and be like, are you still sure about the 9th? And then say if she wants the 9th. He was like, that's what she wants. That's what she gets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially because, Betty and Mother's Day, like, her they tried to frame it that it made him not sound selfish, but she was like, but that's my day. You're trying to take my day.
Yeah, your day once every 6 to 7 years.
why does Betty only get Mother's Day every 6 or 7 years?
No, because so Mother's Day, it would be the 9th on a Sunday every 6 to 7 years, because Mother's Day is always on a Sunday.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's like every 6 to 7 years, then you would have to worry about Mother's Day being on the same day as their anniversary.
You know that Betty is a...
She makes it Mother's Day month.
Yeah. She is like, this is Mother's Day week, and I want something every... You know this. Like, come on. Because right. even this one was like, that's the day before Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was Mother's Day was on the 10th, right? And yeah. she was like, that was... So she wasn't like, that was Mother's Day. She was like, that's Mother's Day weekend.
Right.
How are you going to take Mother's Day weekend?
Oh,
like,
my
just goodness. Get away from that at all. And, like, so it was like, that was really gross. I thought it was yeah. super gross.
Yeah. Can we talk about... hickeys and biting in general? Is that still a thing? I feel like it's super retro. Who's getting anything from that?
I don't know. I think the biting is a little excessive. Like hickeys and stuff, you know, I guess some people just get marks on their skin super easy. Like, because some people, it's got to be, you really got to be going at it for a long time for there to be a hickey or a mark there.
No, that's just weird to me. Why are you sucking on your neck? I don't know. It seems odd. I was going to say parts, but then I was like, oh, well.
Well, there's other parts that get sucked on. Other parts that's people enjoy getting sucked on, yes.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's weird to focus in on one specific area so long that it leaves a mark.
Yeah, that to me is super bizarre, right? Speaking of bizarre, what I also thought was bizarre is, did you check out his car? That is not a farm car.
No. It was funny because I had to go. I watched it a couple times because I couldn't tell what kind of car it was.
Oh, I could tell because my friend has that car. It's a little bit older of a model, but it's like a Nissan 350Z, or it could be a 370Z, but like the Z series.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it took me a minute to figure out. I obviously, when they got to the restaurant, I was like, oh, but in the dark, I couldn't tell.
Yeah. Oh, I could tell. Very distinctive taillights. And like I said, I have a couple friends that have that car.
Oh yeah, the people around here don't drive those. It's the kind of car that, like, I don't know, it just seems like, and it would stick out here, right? It does stick out here. He's not that far away from where I am, and it does because people hear it all about, like, no, there's not very many sports cars or cars that look like sports cars here.
Right. Like,
rich people here tend to get the luxury SUVs and stuff.
Oh, sure.
Right, they go for those. So that one would kind of it would stand out. But yes, definitely not a farm car.
No, not a farm car. Like, and I'm not even saying about how much it is because you don't know. Especially that body style hasn't really changed much because my friend had that early 2000s.
Okay, so I always thought of that one. Okay, to me, from the early 2000s, right? That's what you said.
Yeah,
it looks like Nissan was trying to make a knockoff of the Audi TT.
I want to say that came out before the TT.
Really?
Like that style, yeah.
Because
I think my friend bought it in 2003, 2004, and they had just redid the body. Here we go. I'm going off on a tangent again. But the body really hasn't changed much because I would say then my friend got it more recently, like within 5 years, and the body pretty much looked the same. I mean, they've done a little bit of difference, but... still sure. pretty much the same, yeah.
Sure. All right. Now that we've tangented again on that, maybe it's time to
go to our closing. Today.
I know.
Who is your student of the week?
I definitely went. This was one week where I went through the list and I was like, oh, I didn't like this about them. I didn't like this about them. I didn't like this about them. So I went with Zied for being the least objectionable, for not doing anything terrible. He looked good. I mean, he did clean up nice. I'll give him that.
Well, in general, I mean, everyone's been saying total glow up this season.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Managed to go to the airport without a thing with Rebecca's face on it.
Oh, God, so, yes. That's upgrade. A major improvement. Yes, major so improvement. If anything, most improved Zia.
Yes.
So I just gave my student of the week to Yara because I really, really like her. The more I see her, you know, in this episode, I had a lot of empathy for her situation. It made me realize how she is just in a different class altogether than Jovi, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, this girl is very classy. She's funny. Like, he should, you know, be blessing, or like feeling blessed every day he is with this woman.
She's funny. She's, I mean, like you said, she's self-aware. Like, she knows what's going on. Like, very good.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like we're just going to bounce back and forth between Julia and Yara for like
I know, because I like them both. They're so likable. And what I think is kind of interesting about it is it really could go either way, I found, with the Ukrainian-Russian women that tend to be on this show. You know, there's definitely Matt and Alla. Alla was just, also an angel. But like, it's really hit or miss with the Ukrainian-Russian women.
I would
Russian
say
women.
About the Russian and the Ukrainian women is they tend to, they don't mince words and they just tell you things. Like, mm-hmm. that just, and a lot of times it comes off as way too blunt and way too like forward when they're saying things like,
yeah,
yeah. Like, this is dumb. I think this is dumb. Like, that, you know, and but they're certainly like brutally with their honest.
Right.
Brutal with their honesty.
Right, right. And yeah, because like I said, you got Lala on one end and you got Anfisa on the other end, you know?
Sure.
So it's, you know, it's kind of hit or miss
on
the show.
The one thing you can't fault Anfisa with is she never made any bones about who exactly she was.
Right,
like,
right.
There was never any deception there. Like, it was right out there the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. All right. What about your dunce?
Ah, Jovi.
Like, I know, right?
Just Jovi. I mean, I have to go to work, so you're okay in this foreign country without your passport, right? Like, and then going back and be like, well, let me tell you what really happened. I left her in a foreign country without a passport. I just didn't know she needed surgery.
Like, it's like, that doesn't make it that much better.
Not
geez.
That much better, man. Like, that and the whole, like, just it basically telling her, oh, yeah, I want to have kids so I can come and hang out with them every 4 weeks. And
yeah, then, that's what it sounds jet, like.
Like, it definitely sounds like I want to be a kid. I want to be my kid's cool uncle. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
All right, what about yours? My dunce was Mike.
Okay.
I just kind of feel like he isn't respecting Natalie and her wishes and considering her views. As dumb as an example as this is, but like him lighting the firecrackers when even she was like objecting, the fact that he's saying that, you know, he wants to do this new diet thing and then not, like, drinking in front of her. And it's like, I get that you have differing views and I get that you want to be you, but it's like, you're not even having these conversations with her. It's like almost like he's doing it to spite her or to like throw it in her face. I'm going to do what I want to do and you can't tell me otherwise.
Yeah, I thought it was really bad, especially like the meat. Okay, maybe a misunderstanding, but with the second meal, when he got the beer, like, dude, you can go one meal at a restaurant without a beer. Like,
yeah.
That's okay. Like, especially when he had a whole big thing about it last time. Like,
right.
And it just,
right.
Yeah, it definitely is like throwing it in her face. So that's not bad. But so my life lesson ties in with them. Mm-hmm. And that it's more of a life lesson directed at Natalie, because it's like you have to really self-assess about your deal breakers, right? Because I really think vegetarianism is a deal breaker for her.
It seems like it is.
And like, you can't have a deal breaker and then just expect that the other person is going to modify themselves to meet your deal breaker. Like,
right.
It's called a deal breaker because it breaks the deal. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So my life lesson is inspired by Jovi and Yara. So fights are rarely about a specific series of events or how you remember them. There's an underlying reason, so fighting about facts oftentimes is pointless.
Right. It's not. It wasn't about the specific facts.
No.
That's not why it came up. Like, right. Yeah, it's the definitely that it's how you made me feel. Like, you by leaving, whenever you did leave, you
made me feel abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Absolutely. All right. So this group continues on next week. Oh, actually, I guess we should probably say something about the new Discovery Plus. Did you watch the preview for the Bears All situation?
I certainly did not.
So I watched it and they really only focused on Brandon and Julia. And they were very careful about not doing anything to spoil anything.
Uh-huh.
But what I did think was interesting is... and I don't know if they did this intentionally, so but Betty and Ron made a comment about, well, you aren't married. So almost like, you know. But like I said, it could just be that they're trying not to spoil anything. Maybe, and we don't even have a timeline on when this interview happened. So it could have happened, you know, a while ago, and they're just
they could have been
it
doing
now.
It. They could have done it contemporaneously with the filming. Sure.
But to be honest, that was the only kind of, you know.
I mean, that's why I didn't watch it. It's like it's we always complain so much about the tell-alls, and this just felt like already like tell part of the story. Like that's where we are. Like.
Right. They did kind of talk about. There were a couple moments where Brandon and Julia were kind of like things that weren't shown, but I mean, not like if it was significant, they would have shown it, right? So just these little conversations and Ron and Betty being like, what you guys think that? What? You're going to sneak around? What?
What?
So
oh my
like
God.
Some reaction stuff that on that.
The two horny 20-year-olds in our house would sneak around.
God, I know, right? Yeah. Betty did not do the best job at kind of defending that either. I mean, her defense was that she didn't want therapy for the rest of her life by hearing it.
Like, that's not even, like, I don't know. That's weird.
Yeah.
it's just weird. Like, you're a grown person. Like, you know what happens. Like,
right.
Come on.
So I could say with confidence that I'm not getting Discovery Plus, and so.
Yeah, I'm not getting Discovery Plus either, so
okay.
We will be skipping that then.
Yes. But if someone likes to donate
oh, yeah.
their if Discovery wanted, yeah. Plus subscription, then maybe we can include it. But other than that, I'm not that bothered.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So until next week, then, we'll just cover the 90 Day Fiancé next episode.
That's right. We'll see everybody
then.
See
you then.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Good.